Hi, and welcome to this week's episode of the Cure Talks Cancer podcast. Each week, we'll be hearing from patients, survivors, caregivers, advocates, and healthcare professionals to do what Cure does best, provide cancer updates, research, and education. In this week's episode, we spoke with Felicia Robinson, a breast cancer survivor who shared hers and her daughter's story in their book titled Surviving Pink. By chronicling their story, Felicia and her daughter solidified further their unbreakable bond and learned exactly what the color pink brings with a breast cancer diagnosis.
So you received a DCIS breast cancer diagnosis in 2017. So can you just go through, what was your immediate thoughts, you know, when you heard that you had cancer?
My immediate thought was shock, and then shock went to surviving. Positive thinking, what can I do? I need to gear up to fight. I couldn't be defeated. I made sure that I kept a positive attitude throughout the diagnosis, and I figured that that would, you know, spread to my family and friends, and, you know, they would feed on how I was feeling. So just to maintain positivity and gear up to fight.
Okay. And now, so, you know, kind of talk me through the next couple steps. So I, you know, in reading the book, you went for a second opinion at MD Anderson. What prompted you to seek that second opinion? And I guess, you know, is there advice that you would offer somebody else who might be going through it, you know, the importance of a second opinion?
Okay, the second opinion was a family decision, my extended family as well as my immediate family. I had seen a doctor here in Atlanta, and she recommended that I remove both breasts. And with the diagnosis, it was only showing that the DCIS or the cancer cells were only in the right breast. So I couldn't understand why I had to remove both. And it was more of a personal, I guess I'll say vanity thing with me, because if I could keep one breast, if I could, I kind of still felt that I was part, you know, whole, I guess, if that makes sense. So when they told me to do both here in Atlanta, I mentioned it to my family, and then they, you know, immediately said, well, let's just do a second opinion. And they suggested MD Anderson. I had never heard of MD Anderson because I didn't know anyone that had breast cancer or any type of cancer. So we made the decision to get a referral to go to MD Anderson. And once there, they did their entire battery of tests, and the doctor recommended that I only do the unilateral mastectomy to remove the tissue, the breast that had the cancer cells. And his rationale was, it made sense. He said, you know, breast cancer doesn't jump from breast to breast. So if it's in this one breast, let's deal with the one breast. It's less healing time because you're under anesthesia. You know, just the whole, it would double everything unnecessarily. So if I didn't have to do that, then he highly suggested that I just do the unilateral mastectomy on the right breast.
Okay.
So it's very important because the decisions vary from doctor to doctor, and I think it's more of a comfort level that as a woman going through it, you kind of know what you want to happen, even though that may not always be the case, but you want to give it your best shot to see if you can at least get something that you want from it.
Yeah, exactly. And just kind of, you know, sticking to your guns and saying this is kind of what I want and seeing who can kind of work with you and if that's the best approach for your treatment.
Yes.
Okay. All right. And now, so you did undergo the single mastectomy, and there's, you know, a little quote in the book where you describe a feeling of making this terrible mistake and, you know, kind of what did I do? Can you explain this a little bit more? I'm sure you're not the only person who has ever felt that way after mastectomy.
Okay, so once you have the surgery, you're bandaged up, and you don't really see anything. You just, you know, you're trying to, you know, digest what has just happened. You know, your breast is gone. For me, I did take a picture before the surgery, before I left to go to Texas, just because I just wanted to have a picture of what I looked like before. So it didn't really hit me until when I had to remove the bandages to actually see that I had one breast removed. And the initial even though you've done all your research online, I Googled, I read up on everything, but to actually see it, it is a little bit, it takes you back a little bit, but it also made me realize that I'm still alive. I may have one breast, but I'm still here. I may have, to adjust my clothing. I had thought of all of those things. What kind of bra? How am I going to look? What are people going to see? But you kind of quickly get over that if you have, my faith is what made me say, look, you're alive. You were given another chance at life. So one breast, okay, you can deal with that. It's not the end of the world. So I had to just pull up my big girl panties and say, hey, this is what life has given me, and I'm going to use this to the best of my advantage and move forward. So I didn't stay in that state very long.
Okay. Yeah. And now, I also read in the book in some of the pages that you talked about how this would affect your sexual relationship with your husband. And we hear that all the time, whether it's men or women, and whether it's breast cancer or prostate cancer and all these things that affect you, after treatment. How did you handle this? And, is this still a worry today, or did you have discussions? I guess maybe how did you handle it, and what advice, if somebody else who might be reading this is struggling, what advice could you kind of give them in that area?
So we had, my husband and I had discussed it. He, of course, was whatever, he was for whatever I needed to do to feel comfortable. And we looked at pictures and, prior to the surgery. He came to Texas. He wasn't there when I had the surgery. He came about 10 days later to Houston. And when he saw it, I tried to gauge his initial reaction. He basically said, it just looks like a scar. It looks like, you have a scar. Now, granted, I've been an A cup all my life, or A plus. So I was never a very heavy chested person. So it just kind of looks like, it's just gone. It took me a while mentally, sexually, to undress in front of him, I guess. And even now, sometimes I think he thinks I'm uncomfortable. So if I'm in the bathroom, he'll wait or until I'm, put my bra and prosthesis on before he'll come in. But on that rare occasion where he may walk in, he doesn't give me that feeling of uncomfortableness. And I think because we talked about it and we saw pictures and he saw it, and they feed on my energy. So if I just kind of like, okay, it is what it is, they kind of go with that. So, sexually, I guess for me, being that I did still have one breast, it hasn't really been a big deal. And the more comfortable you get with your body and how, your new normal, then it makes you feel that, you don't have to be ashamed, you don't have to hide, and you can be yourself. And that's what we tried to accomplish here.
Okay.
Even going to the door to get pizza, I forgot one day I didn't have a prosthesis on, and I'm like, oh my gosh, this poor guy's going to look like, what is going on? But you get so comfortable without it. But sometimes, it's a constant reminder. So you still, as a female, I'm reminded of it, but I try not to remind them of it, if that makes sense.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. And now, so you also had to have, chemotherapy. How come? I think if I read correctly, that it spread to the lymph nodes. Is that correct?
Yes. Okay. So I had, once they removed the breast, they discovered that some of the cancer cells had escaped to the lymph nodes, which is common. Once they go in and they start aggravating any type of cells, you run that risk. Mine was a low risk, but it was a risk enough for them to determine that I would need chemo to just kind of kill any remaining cancer cells that may have escaped. So we had it. They call it an oncotype score, which tells you the likelihood of how your cancer is going to respond to treatment and if it's going to come back. So the score you want is under 19, I think it is. Yeah, under 18 meant that you didn't have to have chemotherapy. Well, my score was 29. So with the score 29, that automatically meant that I should highly consider chemo to prevent the recurrence as much as I could on my end.
Yeah.
So that's when it was determined that I would have to do the chemo based on that Oncotype score.
Okay. And did you experience any kind of side effects here? You know, I know obviously a big one is losing your hair, the nausea, the fatigue, all of that. Did you experience that then? And I guess, do you have any kind of, you know, long-term side effects that you're still dealing with now?
Okay. So the first, I guess for women, the main side effect was the hair loss. And it doesn't start coming out until like the second chemo. So the first chemo, you're kind of normal self, you're feeling good, you're going in. And then about going into your second, third chemo, you start noticing your hair, and it's shocking at first because it's coming out. You put your hands through it, and you know, you have a lump of hair in your hands. So I made the decision to go ahead and just shave it off and go bald. Now, I think for my husband, that was probably the most shocking thing for him, because I went to his barber, and his barber kind of cut it low. And I think my husband was like, yeah, just cut it low. Oh, that's nice. That's a nice hairstyle. And I'm looking like, no, it's not going to be a hairstyle. All of this hair has to come off. So that night, he went to work, and my daughter and I got on YouTube, and we were like, okay, we got to figure out how to shave your head, because the hair started coming out in little bitty fine pieces at that point. So she and I made the decision to just go ahead and shave it off. So the next morning, he came home, he saw it. And, you know, I think that's when he got it, like, okay, so her hair is gone. This is something that she had to do. The other side effects were more the nausea and fatigue. And they give you medication for that, but it still hits you like a brick about the second or third chemo, because your body, all of that medicine and those drugs have kind of just gotten all through your system and your bones and your joints, and you're miserable. You lose your taste. Everything you eat tastes like metal. It's really bad. It gets bad. But it's doable. You can survive it. But there were some really low points, and that's where my daughter stepped in as the caregiver role, because my husband worked nights and she was the one that was here. So she got to experience all of those things with me. So she and I just kind of, you know, Googled what we could, tried to figure out what works. We bought ginger. We bought different teas. We just researched and tried to find what we could find to help alleviate the symptoms. And then they pass. They last for about 48 hours, and then you kind of feel fine up until the next chemo, and then you go, the cycle starts all over. But the closer you get to the end, it doesn't bother you as much, because you know you're almost at the finish line. So
yeah, absolutely. And now, so can you dive into more of your relationship with your daughter? Because obviously that's, you know, the more of the focus of the book is your diagnosis and how, you know, it kind of strengthened your relationship with her. Maybe talk about that relationship and kind of what prompted you guys to write the book, and then we can go into a little bit about what the book is about.
Okay, my daughter and I, we've always had a close relationship. We started a party planning business maybe about 5 years prior to the cancer diagnosis. So we would always, we did kid birthday parties, party favors, different things. So she and I would just work together during that. So through high school, it was just important for me to be there for her as a mother, no matter what she had going on, to be able to talk to her, to be able to listen to her. So when the cancer diagnosis came along, she was the first person that I went to when I discovered the lump, because we just had that close bond. So when I shared the lump with her, her initial reaction, and we actually had a party that night that we were doing for a 50th birthday, and that morning she said, oh, Mom, this feels like maybe your bra's too tight or something under your arm. You know, it's nothing. So we went on about our day, did the party and everything. So within the next couple of days is when I had think that God told me to prepare for what was coming, because every morning I would wake up and I would feel to see if the lump was still there, and it was still there. So I had to process it and then make a decision to share it with my family members. My daughter was in college. She was a senior, and she had contemplated sitting out the semester so that she could be there for me. And my family, I made the decision that, no, you need to continue going, that anything I needed, they would be there for me. So that's the part of the book where I talk about the village and how everyone kind of stepped up and helped out where they could. So our relationship or our bond was more so strengthened with this diagnosis because I knew that she knew that if it happened to my mom, could it happen to me? Now I'm going to have to disclose at every doctor's appointment that I have an immediate family member who has breast cancer. You know, what am I going to do if this happens? So I know she had all of those emotions going on at such a young age. And in her case, she didn't have the support of extended family to come in and help her out. So that probably was the pivoting point of, I got to try to see if she's good. She's trying to make sure I'm good. And a lot of family and friends stated that they just didn't know how to help. They didn't know what to do. They didn't know what questions to ask her. They didn't know, you know, how to handle it. So she felt alone the majority of the time. So she had to pull on her strength. And one of her close church members, she contacted her and she prayed with her and talked with her and was kind of there for her if she needed her. But in a caregiver role, I felt I needed to try, as a survivor, I'm trying to protect her and she's trying to protect me. So there does need to be more resources and assistance for those caregivers that kind of find themselves stepping up in that role.
Yeah, absolutely. And now, you know, I guess from there, you know, I guess you saw her, like, I think you hit the nail on the head when you said you were trying to protect her and she was trying to protect you. I think that that's often kind of what happens in those caregiver, survivor, patient roles. You know, and I guess, did you guys talk about that aspect of it, or was it really not until you kind of sat down to write the book that you kind of realized those things?
Well, the book came of, I turned 50 that following February, and at my 50th birthday party that my family threw for me, I made the announcement, it came out of nowhere. I was thanking everyone for coming, and I said, "And we're going to release a book about breast cancer, my journey." So everybody there was, they were excited, and that was the first time that everyone of my family and friends had seen me since the treatments and everything. So it was everybody, they were just kind of relieved that I was doing well. I was looking good. I was looking healthy. So I attribute that to the Holy Spirit telling me to write the book, because I had no intentions of writing a book. So when we got home later that evening, my daughter asked me, she said, "So we're writing a book?" And I said, "Yeah." She was like, "Well, okay." So we kind of put it on the back burner for maybe about 2 weeks or so. So I said, "Well, Deara, we need to start writing this book." So she said, "Okay." So what we did was put topics in a bowl. And every night, every weekend, or whenever we had free time, we would just pull a topic and start writing about it. Because what I wanted it to be was a book that I wanted her to write with how she felt about the topic, and I wrote what I felt without us talking about it before. So she would write hers, and I would be writing. And it wasn't until we finished everything, we had gone through all of the topics, and we had finished everything, we went to Starbucks, and we swapped notes. So she gave me her notes, and I gave her my notes. And that was a very eye-opening experience for me, because I didn't realize how she really felt or what she was really going through, and vice versa. So that was kind of our moment of, wow, you know, we really survived this. Like, we did this. I went to chemo. I lost my hair. You know, you felt this way. You cried. You know, she got on the plane by herself. She was terrified, which she didn't tell me at the time that, you know, she was terrified of flying by herself. But she flew out to Houston like the second day I had surgery, even though she was not supposed to come until 10 days later. She was like, "I couldn't wait 10 days to see you." She bought her own plane ticket, Ubered from Houston Airport to MD Anderson Cancer Center to see me. So it was more so I wanted it to be raw, and I wanted for us not to manipulate how each other felt about it, so that she can speak on her truth and I can speak on my truth.
Yeah, absolutely. And now, so can you kind of give like an overview, if you were to see a friend on the street and give them a quick overview about, you know, what they can expect from Surviving Pink, what would you say to them?
I would start off by saying that if you told me, I'm going to quote it from the book, that if you told me by the age of 50 that I would have breast cancer diagnosis, 4 rounds of chemo, a 22-year-old daughter stepping up as my caregiver, I would not have believed you. But I was not sad because I was thankful that I was surviving. Surviving Pink offers information, inspiration, and encouragement for anyone going through a life-altering diagnosis. My diagnosis was breast cancer, but for you and for so many, it could be cancer, it could be diabetes, it could be heart conditions, it could be anything that kind of knocks you off of what your journey you had planned to be. Surviving Pink would give you that inspiration to keep going and to keep moving forward, because I survived, my daughter survived, and we know that you can survive as well.
That's perfect. And now, is there any kind of quote or life motto that you live by, whether you followed it before or this is something that kind of came after your diagnosis and now into survivorship?
Oh, I have so many. I guess I would really say never, 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 never give up. And there's hope even when your brain tells you there isn't. So you have to believe that there is hope and you have to keep going.
For more information, visit survivingpink.com. Don't forget to subscribe to the Cure Talks Cancer podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or other apps to hear every episode, or visit curetoday.com/podcasts. The Cure Talks Cancer podcast is the official podcast of Cure Magazine, the indispensable guide to every stage of the cancer experience. For more information, visit us at curetoday.com and find us on Twitter at @cure_magazine or Facebook at @curemagazine.